It's become a warning for investors to take a more cautious approach. I'm David Brancaccio in New York. Let's get right to a droopy stock market. The Dow in early trading is down 219 points, 0.9%. The S&P 500 down 0.6%. The NASDAQ Composite down 0.7%. Stock market indicators in Asia had a down Wednesday. The Hang Seng in Hong Kong fell 1.6%. Shanghai was down more than 2%. Europe is down as well. Let's check in with Susan Schmidt, Senior Portfolio Manager at Westwood Holdings Group in Dallas. Good morning.
Good morning.
Europe is significantly down. Key indexes, the DAX index in Germany is down. I saw the FTSE in London down. I mean, where's this coming from?
The word on the street is that it's trading down in sympathy with Asia. Asia was down overnight, and people are speculating that Asia was down because there were a couple of earnings reports that weren't very strong. We don't have a lot of economic data that got released, and we're in a period of time where there's not a lot of volume in the market. And you do sometimes see things move, and sometimes there's just no apparent reason for it.
I mean, we could point fingers at the Turkish situation, yet the Turkish currency is rallying again for the second day. So for the moment, the slide has been contained. All right, U.S. retail sales. There was a bright spot this morning for July. They were up.
And I think that's partly because we've seen the impact of the tax cuts finally flow through. Initially, the instinct of the consumer and the person who receives that tax cut is to save it. And then after a couple of months, they start to spend it. Well, we're in that couple of months right now, and I think people are out spending.
Susan Schmidt at Westwood Holdings Group in Dallas. Thank you.
Thank you.
U.S. Treasuries got popular this morning, allowing the yield to fall on the 10-year note below 2.86% for that guide to U.S. interest rates. And the price of copper is down 7.5% this month, given worries about falling emerging market currencies, given Turkey. Other metals are down as well. Now, some cheap advice drawn from experience. Don't just negotiate the salary for that new job. Take into account how much it costs to live wherever it is you have to move. Seriously, the online job information company Indeed.com has just calculated where in America you can find the optimum combination of higher pay and okay cost of living, Marketplace's Mitchell Hartman reports.
Indeed.com economist Jed Kalko looked for cities where the average local salary will buy the most based on the local cost of living. Among those, he looked for places
where unemployment is relatively low, places where job growth in the future is projected to be strong.
So where will your salary go the furthest? Duluth, Minnesota, then Wilmington, North Carolina, and Lubbock, Texas. Not far behind at number 8 is Salem, Oregon. It's just an hour from Portland, where I'm based and where the cost of living is soaring. I meet 70-year-old Portland resident Victoria Cunningham taking a walk in the summer heat and ask if she'd move to Salem for a higher standard of living. She's got an elderly mother to take care of, so not right now, but eventually.
Probably.
I ask why, after living in Portland her entire life.
Affordability.
She says everything's gotten too expensive lately. Hard to make ends meet on a fixed income. I'm Mitchell Hartman for Marketplace.
We keep hearing that 20 and 30-somethings prefer buying experiences to products. What if they actually can do both? In the latest issue of The Economist magazine's arts and culture publication called 1843, there's a piece about retail stores that have become such hot tickets that they may not even care if you buy anything. The reporter is Cassia St. Clair, who joins us from London. Hi there. Thanks for joining us.
My pleasure.
What is the story here? People get on lists like it's a concert or a exclusive club to go into a boutique or a shop?
Since the 1990s, we've obviously had online shopping, and that's been brilliant and incredibly convenient for customers. But online shopping is also quite flat and utilitarian in a lot of ways. Then it's quite hard for customers to distinguish between different brands and to get a real feel for them. And so brands that have bricks and mortar spaces, and even some brands that don't and hold pop-ups, want to kind of engage customers in a very different way within these real life spaces.
And it sure isn't if you walk into one of these boutiques trying to create an event to get you in. It's not like shopping in a warehouse store. You might not even see the product at first.
Yes, in some ways it's really quite surprising, because you get stores where almost the point doesn't seem to be the products on sale at all. There's a store called Supreme that's opened relatively recently in Brooklyn, and the majority of the floor space of this store is taken up by a skate ring. And the store is very large, and yet very few people are allowed in at any one time. There are bouncers on the door sort of carefully controlling the flow of people into the space itself. The fact that you can't get in at will, you have to wait, and you can't skate on the rink unless you're kind of exclusively invited, adds this sort of aura to a brand, which is just not possible to create on an online space in the same way.
I like the makeup place, I think it was in San Francisco in your piece, where a little hand in a rubber glove comes out of a slot in the wall and spritzes you with perfume, if you so desire.
Yes, these spaces have to be very carefully managed, because if the selling part of these events or of these stores becomes too overt, it can kind of begin to seem a little bit desperate, was the word that I heard from one particular brand. They don't want to, you know, make people think that they're kind of desperate to get people in their stores. They want to create events that really fit with their identity and that are very memorable, memorable in the right way, so that the customers will leave the event or leave the store, and when they're next thinking about a particular product, they remember this brand.
Cassia St. Clair wrote the piece in The Economist magazine's sibling publication called 1843. Ms. St. Clair, thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
In case you wondered why that magazine is called 1843, it's because that's the year of the founding of its parent publication, The Economist magazine. If you guessed that's the year Charles Thurber patented the typewriter, well, that's not the reason, but it was the year. I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Morning Report from APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.